Hi, everybody. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz coming to you from our studios here inside Lambeau Field. And Wes, let's start by taking a look ahead to this weekend, big weekend with the Packers Hall of Fame induction ceremonies. And for the first time, we're going to see alums from the Super Bowl 45 championship team get inducted into the Packers Hall of Fame. The first two to go in, Nick Collins and Chad Clifton. Let's start with Collins, and the first thing you think of, unfortunately, is just how tragic it was that his career was cut short when it was.
Yeah, absolutely, and you know, and I talked to both Darren Perry, the safeties coach, and Dom Capers about this, and where he was at his point in his career when he suffered that neck injury in Carolina back in 2011, second week of the year. Really, he was just moving into that prime portion of his career, only 28 years old at that point, coming off that memorable Super Bowl. And I think when you think back to that, one of the first images that comes into your mind is him sliding into the end zone, arms outstretched, Clay Matthews draped over his shoulder.
Yeah.
It was an iconic moment, and it was something I know all the papers, most of the TV, that was one of the things that everybody put on, you know, their medium.
Yeah, you look at the Packers Super Bowl history, you know, Max McGee's catches, Willie Wood's interception, Herb Adderley's interception return, Favre to Rison, Favre to Freeman in Super Bowl 31, and you've got Nick Collins' pick six
right in
Super Bowl 45. It stands out, no doubt.
And it wasn't just that he just showed up in that game. It was that he was coming off three straight Pro Bowls at that point, you know, three straight All-Pro appearances. He was really coming into his own, 6-7 interceptions a year. It's amazing what he was able to accomplish in a short time. And obviously, when you think back to his time in Green Bay, there's always going to be that sort of bittersweetness to what he accomplished and probably what he still had left on the table at that point.
Yeah, I really felt he started to come on in his career in 2008. I believe he had three interceptions returned for touchdowns that year, and that was his first Pro Bowl season, if I recall. You think about the fact that he was Ted Thompson's second draft pick, second round pick in 2005 after Aaron Rodgers. Was Nick Collins perhaps headed to Canton? And, you know, would this have maybe been Ted Thompson's first two draft picks, both ending up with gold jackets at the end of their careers?
You can make a very good argument, with all the respect to Clay Matthews and the other greats that Ted Thompson has drafted, that his first two picks were his greatest. And they are certainly what put the Packers into speed drive in terms of that quote-unquote rebuild, if you want to call it that, coming off the 4-12 season, and where they were at that point
right in
time. So, I mean, that's one of the things, too. I was talking with Darren Perry about this, that really it's difficult when they think back on it, because he was a Pro Bowler in 2008. A new defensive coordinator came in 2009. He never acted like he knew everything. He was open to the switch to the 3-4, and it only made him a better player.
Yeah, and I've seen Nick a few times at events over the last few years, and just a super guy, great family man. You know, as much as he hated to have to walk away from football, he loves all the time he's gotten to spend with his kids over the last few years. Just a really great guy. It's always a joy to talk to him. And it turns out, boy, the Packers had a hard time replacing him. The rest of 2011, after he went down in week two, you know, the secondary certainly had its struggles without him. Then 2012 and 2013, they really didn't find a safety that could even come close to his level. And then in 2014, you had the first-round selection of Ha-Ha Clinton-Dix, and that's where that position started to turn back around for Green Bay.
And it's amazing, Mike. You saw this, too. 2008, 7 interceptions. 2009, 6 interceptions. 4 in 2010. The Packers did not get an interception from a safety in 2013. It was the first time, and I believe, since they started keeping the stat for that part of the secondary. And it just shows you how irreplaceable he was for that time. And the Packers ended up coming in. They invested a first-round pick. It was able to, you know, in Ha-Ha Clinton-Dix, it elevated the play of Morgan Burnett. And they're in probably one of the best situations right now in the NFL when you look at Micah Hyde and what they have at that position in terms of depth. But how long it took them to get to that point, the injuries that they dealt with at times, you know, the first move was moving Charles Woodson to that position, and it just showed, even with an all-pro like Charles Woodson, it's not easy to find that kind of production, and it's one of those things that in the moment you probably took for granted. I took for granted with Nick Collins, and that that's just production. Not only the Packers weren't getting, but it's difficult to get in the NFL in general.
Yeah, and when you look back at 2010, obviously we talked about the pick six in Super Bowl 45, but week 17 against Chicago here at Lambeau Field, right down the stretch, the score is 10-3.
Right.
The Bears driving to tie it. The Packers have to win to get in the playoffs. Nick Collins gets the interception in the waning moments that gets Green Bay into the playoffs and starts the whole thing.
Yeah, and you know, let's not. I don't want to throw a wet blanket over his career. It was a great career, and he's being honored for that. You know, at the Packers Hall of Fame. I think that's one of the special things about this is that now we're able to kind of reflect, and it's only been 5 years since they won the Super Bowl, but you know him, and we'll talk about Chad Clifton in a little bit, but their contributions to that, no, they weren't Aaron Rodgers, you know, they weren't the guys that I think were drawing all the headlines, but they were so important to that run and catalyst to what they were able to accomplish, and for him to get this opportunity to be honored, Charles Woodson will be presenting him, which will be a nice little, addition to that, a guy that also had a big run and a big contribution to that team, so I think that'll be a big time for celebration, and, you know, really really acknowledging what he was able to accomplish in his time at Green Bay.
Yeah, it should be a fun Saturday night, and we'll talk a little bit more about Chad Clifton after the break. We'll be back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, let's turn our attention to the other Super Bowl 45 alum being inducted into the Packers Hall of Fame this weekend. Left tackle Chad Clifton, a second-round draft pick out of Tennessee back in 2000. And the first thing you think of with Chad Clifton's career was that nasty hit he took from Warren Sapp down in Tampa in 2002. And for Clifton not only to come back from that and be back playing the very next season, all the rehab, all the work that it took to come back, but then he goes to multiple Pro Bowls in his career after that. Really just a remarkable story in the perseverance and the recovery from something that, you know, people weren't sure, even right. Chad himself, right away, just where his future was headed.
Well, and I think when not only when it relates to Clifton's career, but I think when you think of, you know, the 2000 Packers, that's one of the moments that people will immediately think of. Just the emotion that drew out of people. I remember, you know, it was Mike Sherman's reaction to it and all the things that were involved with it. The one guy you never heard really lose his temper about it or come out and trash, you know, Warren Sapp was Chad Clifton. I mean, I think that probably was sort of epitomized him as a person, you know, kind of soft-spoken, mild-mannered, went about his business. And when you talk about, you know, his longevity, despite that, I mean, he came back and it was, what, the next six, seven seasons missed two games after that when he came back in 2013. So it's 165 career games, 160 of those he started. Just a pillar of that offensive line. He led the transition from those great teams in the early 2000s to what we have today. Just so many different things you can talk about with him. But again, it comes back to always being there on Sunday.
Yeah, and he, after the Sapp hit and the recovery that took, the rest of his career, he really had to go the extra mile, to get ready to play on Sundays. His body needed a lot of maintenance, I guess you might say. And he really had to put in the time in the training room. Maybe he had to miss practice here and there, you know, to get the body ready to go. But he was always ready to go. And I always liked the comment that Mark Tauscher had about Chad Clifton. Tauscher was obviously his right tackle for so many years opposite Clifton at left tackle. And he called him the big Lamborghini because you only take him out of the garage on Sunday afternoons. So those two were quite a pair, but Clifton at left tackle. I remember Joe Philbin when he took over as offensive line coach and then offensive coordinator and worked very closely with Clifton, always said that, boy, those Tuesday game planning meetings, you could breathe a little easier not having to worry about the other team's top pass rusher when Chad Clifton was going to be out there.
Yeah, and just a testament to his career. Made two Pro Bowls after that incident, and again, was a guy that really did. He was always there, and I can't speak for Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers. They were the ones that, you know, were having their blind side, you know, with him protecting it. But
sure,
from what you've heard over the years and the way they speak about him, you know, James Campen, the offensive line coach now, I know you chatted with him about this too, just the consummate professional and a guy that from day one when he stepped in here really had no problem stepping into those shoes and filling that hole. And we've seen, I mean, when you look at the most important positions in the NFL, left tackle is in the top three, top four. You know,
Absolutely.
It's been that way for the last 30 years. So to have a staple like that, to have a guy that you can put in there for the 10 years everybody talks about, he was the ultimate comfort zone. And he was something that I think the Packers, even though he was on the lighter end, you know, the latter, you know, part of his career, having him in that Super Bowl team in 2010, it was probably fitting for him to kind of go out in that way.
Yeah, and James Campen, you mentioned his offensive line coach for the back half of his career will be presenting
right.
Clifton at the ceremony over the weekend. And Coach Campen wasn't interested in really giving away what he was going to talk about. He wanted, I think he's got a few zingers planned, maybe you might say, for his old protege. But two guys that got along very well, and Coach Campen was really honored that Chad Clifton called him up and asked him to be his presenter at the ceremony.
Yeah, and Campy, he's a guy that doesn't always wear his emotions on the sleeve. It's you know, sometimes he does, sometimes he doesn't. But as he told you, I thought was a really emotional and good quote, saying that when he called, it got really quiet. He got really quiet.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're talking about offensive linemen here. These are big, tough, strong guys. And it's not always easy, I don't think, for them to be emotional and to, you know, maybe sometimes really convey their, just from Campus perspective, maybe be that sentimental kind of guy.
Right.
But for it to mean that much to him, and for Clifton to go to that length, even though he wasn't his first position coach, to really acknowledge that Campen's the guy he wants to present him, I thought was really nice. And it will be really interesting to see what he has to say. He mentioned he wants his 3 minutes with him beforehand, and then he's going
to
Yeah,
he wants to get his hands on him one more time. So we'll see what he has in store. Well, after the break, let's turn our attention to the current Packers offensive line. We'll talk about that on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. The Packers' current offensive line, Wes, a veteran, experienced group. When I look at this unit coming into training camp, I think roster spots might be hard to come by. And what I mean by that is you have the five starters who, you know, barring injury, will be on the team, obviously. You have J.C. Tretter and Lane Taylor as backups. You drafted Jason Spriggs as an offensive tackle in the second round. That's eight spots that, as far as I can tell, are pretty much locked up. Doesn't leave a whole lot of room for other guys, and there are strong candidates who are going to make bids for jobs, and there aren't enough to go around.
Yeah, even you mentioned Spriggs. I mean, Kyle Murphy from Stanford, the late-round pick for them. You're talking about a guy that was one of the top recruits in the country. I believe he was the top recruit in Stanford's recruiting class when he went in there, and he did a lot of good things, you know, for them as well. So there's a lot of established guys with good resumes that are going to be competing for roles on this offensive line. And, you know, depth-wise, looking at the whole group from what they have, I think it's a fun position that the Packers are in because, you know, if you look at them, you and I were talking about this, you know, potentially how many positions, you know, might be available at that spot. You go to 2012, you know, when they had Evan Dietrich Smith and Don Barkley as their only backups going into the regular season, only seven guys.
Yeah, that was amazing,
yeah.
Actually, just only keep seven.
Right, and they fortunately, for the most part, were able to stay healthy. Brian Bulaga had an injury, but otherwise, you know, everyone was pretty much in the fold. Now you look at their situation this year and how they've really augmented a really solid group already. It's going to be interesting to watch them kind of how the dynamic grows during training camp because they'll be able to make some decisions on how they want to handle the veterans. They're going to have plenty of guys that are all going to be wanting to take the reps. So very interested to see how all that plays out.
Yeah, one guy I'm going to have my eye on, Don Barkley. He's another year removed now from that knee injury that cost him the 2014 season. He didn't play as well as he had hoped in 2015 coming back from that knee injury, but we've seen it with other players in the past. The first year back from an ACL, guys don't always quite get back to where they were. If Don Barkley gets back to the player he was before the injury, he will be making a strong bid for a roster spot here. A couple other guys, Josh Walker, a big guy, plays a lot of guard, can also play some tackle. He was on the active roster last year, got a little bit of experience, got his feet wet. Matt Rotherham, a big offensive lineman out of Pittsburgh who was undrafted last year, spent the year on the practice squad. a guard, but also worked at center during this past offseason. So a number of candidates, and then you mentioned Kyle Murphy, the sixth-round draft pick out of Stanford. Not all of these guys can make the team, but the competition, we talked about James Campen in the last segment, the competition is what is going to forge the best possible unit, and some of the guys who don't make the team will probably be brought back on the practice squad if they clear waivers.
Yeah, certainly, and I think when we're going to have five preseason games, I think we're going to see the best second team line that we've seen, at least during my time covering the beat.
Yeah, I would agree.
And how deep they can go and the amount of, you know, guys where they can put them. I'm very interested to see how things go with Donnie Barclay, though, because here's a guy that, I mean, he's a grinder. He made the roster in 2012 as a grinder. If you think back to all the guys that have made the team as undrafted free agents for the Packers, I think he's second in games played right now behind Sam Shields. I mean, this is a guy that's played and started a lot of games for the Green Bay Packers. I've always liked what he's done, particularly in run blocking. I think he's just the guy. He's gritty. He's going to get in there. He does look stronger. I think the early reports on him have been good in him being able to have a whole offseason program to focus and rebuild himself. And realistically, there is going to be a lot of competition, but I think that's going to be something that when you look at J.C. Treader and Lane Taylor and Jason Spriggs, all these guys trying to vie for spots in roles on this offensive line, I think it's going to be the old adage of iron sharpening iron. I really do. I think it's going to be a good group, and I think it's going to be interesting to see what comes out of this training camp.
Yeah, J.C. Treader, the guy who was sort of the super sub, you know, fills in at center for Corey Linsley a few games last year, and then by the playoffs he's filling in at left tackle and helped the Packers win that playoff game at Washington. So a real valuable piece there. You know, Donnie Barclay, the first word Coach Campen ever says is tough when it comes to Barkley. You look at the way this offensive line has been built. Josh Sitton drafted in 2008, TJ Lang in 2009, Brian Bulaga in 2010. In recent years, David Bakhtiari was the new guy in 13, Corey Linsley was the new guy in 14. 2015 is where everybody was experienced, but then suddenly all the injuries hit, and that starting five was only together for 8 out of 18 games last year when they were together for 17 out of 18 the previous year. So injuries will always play a role in that kind of thing, but these guys pride themselves on getting out there and being ready to play. We've seen Lang and Sitton in particular play through injuries throughout their career, so that the health watch will be a part of this as well.
I know all these guys want to be out there. They're all going to do everything they can to be on the field, but with Sitton and Lang in particular, I think you're probably going to have to remove an arm or a leg to get them off the field, honestly.
Yeah.
I mean, what they've played through, and Sitton doing it at a Pro Bowl level, in my opinion, TJ Lang doing it at a Pro Bowl level, it just hasn't been there in terms of the recognition, particularly last season. These guys, they give it their all, and it's an important part of this offense, and it's an important part of this offensive line and the mentality that they have.
Yeah, definitely. Well, one more segment to go, and after the break, we'll talk about a little rule change that the NFL has thrown at us this season. We'll be back with that on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, real quickly in the final segment, the catch rule. Supposedly clarified by the NFL. How do you read it, and what do you think about it?
A player has caught a pass when he maintains control of the ball until he has the ball long enough to clearly become a runner. A player has the ball long enough to become a runner when, after his second foot is on the ground, he is capable of avoiding or warding off impending contact of an opponent, tucking the ball away, turning upfield, or taking additional steps.
All right, so Wes, what's the Wes version of that rule?
I have no idea what a catch is. Honestly,
still don't?
I don't. I really don't.
What I think is interesting about that is the whole thing about going to the ground and all that has kind of been removed.
It has been.
And so they're looking at it in a different way, and I think it's going to make balls that are ruled catches on the field, it's going to be harder to overturn them and rule them incomplete. This going to the ground thing being taken out of the equation, clearly the Dez Bryant play would be a catch. The Larry Fitzgerald play that the Packers thought should have been overturned in the playoffs last year, that's not even going to be challenged by anybody right. anymore.
Yeah, and I do agree with that. I think that's a good plan because the Packers, by the letter of the law, I think felt very strongly that the Larry Fitzgerald catch should have yeah. been overturned.
Yeah.
But now, yeah, with some of the changes that they've made, it's more understandable when they sustain it, you know? But, I mean, the thing is, and this is just me, I'm not speaking for anybody else, I really am very confused by the catch thing. I know Mike McCarthy brought it up after the game in Arizona. What is a catch anymore? We can only hope that this is something that's going to make it more streamlined. But at the end of the day, there's always going to be a certain amount of subjectivity to this.
Yeah.
And I just don't know if there's ever going to be a black and white, okay, what's a catch, what isn't a catch. I think we're still at some point in the season, whether it's with the Packers or another team in the NFL, this is going to come up again. So
yeah, I think the one thing the rule clarification is hopefully going to do is that more often than not, when you're watching the game on TV and you see the replay, if it looks like a catch, it's going to be a catch.
Right.
And there have been too many times since the Calvin Johnson thing at Soldier Field back in week one of 2010 that plays that look like catches to you and me and to every other football fan out there watching it on TV have been overturned
sure.
because of this technicality of going to the ground. And the fact that they're moving away from that language, I think is going to be good for the game.
Yeah, and it should help. You know, and I'm sure, much like with the studying patterns, once I fully understand all this more and once all the fans understand this more, I get where the NFL is going and where the officials are going. They've done a tremendous job of communicating, I think, in recent years with Dean Blandino and making sure that people understand why things are the way they are. And if something was wrong, admitting it was wrong. But yeah, now let's see how they put this to, paper.
See how it works in practice.
Let's see how it works out on the field. That's what I'm going to be very curious to see how it turns out. I'm sure it'll come up in training camp again now, too.
Yeah, definitely. Training camp and the preseason will be the first test. So with that, that's a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com, on Twitter, at Wes Hodd, at Mike Spofford, at Packers for the Team account. Thanks for watching, everybody, and we'll see you next time.